we come up to the departure of Srila Prabhupada now. We've gotten that far, and you kind of have an idea of maybe something close to the actual state of things in our movement. And then, of course, these events took place, which then became quite controversial later on. Although at the time, I don't think anybody seemed to be pretty, any seemed to have too much objection involving these. The way Prabhupada dealt with who was going to become initiating guru after he was gone, and what that meant. In Prabhupada's will, one of the things he did in his last days in Vrindavan was write his will. He spent a lot of time working on that. Especially dealing with the properties and the property trustees. And in the first line in his will, where an acharya traditionally appoints his successor, that's where Prabhupada said the GBC, the governing body commission, shall be the ultimate managing authority for the entire International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then, but the question came up, about how initiations were going to take place after Prabhupada's departure. The GBC went to him with this question in mind. And of course that's the famous one of the famous appointment tapes that have been subjected to minute analysis. I don't think I want to get into the entire rhythmic issue and what actually happened, because that will take us well into the next century to deal with this. But from the GBC minute books of May 28th, the GBC kept a minute book, and I have a photocopy here from this minute book. When the rhythmic issue first erupted in 89, started putting out this thing called ISKCON Journal, which only went through two issues, but the first issue dealt with the Rithvik controversy in the form it was then in 1989. And so I found the GBC minute book and recorded, this is Satsrupa Maharaj's handwriting, along with the signatures of 18 GBC members attesting to the minutes. And so this says on May 28th in Vrindavan, resolve the following questions will be taken to Srila Prabhupada for his answers. They will be presented by a committee of Tamal Krishna Goswami, Satrup Goswami, Jagadish, Rupanuga, Bhagavan, Kirtanananda, Bali Mardan. Interesting, Bali Mardan was still in the GBC at that time. Yeah, he was. Okay. Questions were, these are the questions. One, how long should GBC members remain in office? Question two, how can GBC members who leave be replaced? Question three, in the absence of Srila Prabhupada, what is the procedure for first, second, and sannyas initiations? Four, what is the relationship of the person who gives this initiation to the person he gives it to? 5. Is there any provision for publication of other translations of Vaishnava scriptures by the BBT after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada? So the question clearly is all about after Prabhupada's disappearance. And it was taped. And they started, if you look at what the GBC minutes were with the questions, they go through these right in order. The only thing I think that doesn't get mentioned is sannyas initiation. But otherwise, everything is there. So Satchrup starts by saying, these, I didn't hand these out because they're available on an infinite number of websites, things like that. Because all these Satchrup, Srila Prabhupada, we are all asked by the rest of the GBC to come and ask some questions. These are the members of the original GBC as you first made it up. They had a list of people. Our first question is about the GBC members. We want to know how long they should remain in office. See, Satchrup Maharaj is literally reading Prabhupada. They should remain for good. Tamo Krishna. They should remain for good. Typical Prabhupada. Selected men are proven, so they cannot be changed. Rather, some competent men are, they should be added. And then he talks about adding somebody. Then our next question concerns initiations in the future, particularly at that time when you are no longer with us. We want to know how first and second initiation would be conducted. He doesn't mention sannyas here when he says here, Prabhupada. Yes. The way I take it, Prabhupada heard and understood the question. We're talking about when you're no longer with us, how should first and second initiations be conducted? Yes, I shall recommend some of you, after this is settled up, I guess the rest of the questions or whatever other business, I shall recommend some of you to act as officiating acharya. That's the word he used, officiating acharya. Now the trouble begins. Tamal Krishna says, is that called Ritvik acharya? Prabhupada says, Ritvik, yes. And it's almost when you hear the tape, it's like you don't know whether Prabhupada is just responding to the word, answering the question. Where did this term come from? It's introduced by Tamal Krishna Goswami. We asked him, where did you learn this? Get this term Ritvik? It doesn't really occur anywhere in Prabhupada's literature except as the name of a kind of a priest and a sacrifice. He said, well, I think I heard it from Prajumna, Tamal Krishna says. He doesn't remember. Satchrup then immediately hurries on. Then what is the relationship of that person who gives the initiation? So they're saying, what happened? I shall recommend some of you as officiating acharya. He says, Ritvik acharya. Prabhupada says, Ritvik, yes. And then Satchrup plunges ahead. Next question. What is the relationship of that person who gives the initiation? And so here things get a little muddy. Who's talking about what? What's going on? Srila Prabhupada said, he's guru. Satchrup says, but he does it on your behalf. So it's a little question about when they're... Anyway, Prabhupada, yes, that is formality. Now, see, Prabhupada says, because in my presence one should not become guru. So here Prabhupada clears up what he means about formality. He does it on my behalf. On my order, Amar Ajnai Guru Hana. Here Prabhupada introduces this quotation from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He is actually guru, but on my order. So then they'll also be considered your disciples. So people are on different wavelengths here. Srila Prabhupada, yes, they are disciples, but consider who Tamal Krishna interrupts. No, he's asking that these Ritviks, they're officiating, giving diksha, the people they give dikshas to, whose disciples are they? Srila Prabhupada, they are his disciples. Tamal Krishna, they are his disciples. Who is initiating? He is grand disciple. Then Tamal Krishna says, let's go on. Satsrup says, then we have a question concerning Prabhupada. When I order you become guru, remember he says again, when I order you, so in my presence as a formality on my behalf, but when I order you, you become guru. He becomes regular guru, he uses this term. That's all. He becomes disciple of my disciple, just see. Then he says, next we have a question about the BBT, and he goes on to this question about translating books. Then at the end, there's Prabhupada said how the person who translates should be realized. It's not order, it is not ABCD translation. A devotee says it is not a matter of scholarship, meaning mundane scholarship. Then Prabhupada says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Amar Asnai Guru Hana. One who can understand the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can become guru. Or one who understands his guru's order, same parampara, he can become guru. Therefore, I shall select some of you. So see, at the end, he returns and makes his point again, which is typical way thing would do with Prabhupada. And then they talk again about the GBC men. And then he says about the GBC, what to do if someone falls down. Yes, he should be replaced. Prabhupada said, they must be all ideal, talking about GBC, acharyas. In the beginning, this is an interesting sentence of Prabhupada's, in the beginning we have done for working. Now we should be very cautious. Anyone is deviating, he could be replaced. And Prabhupada says we have done for working means for practical matters we've made accommodations to our principles. But now, in the future, we should be more strict. Anyway, that's that conversation. What the GBC understood, when they finished this, they went back, and these are the recorded minutes. For the purpose of recording information, Srila Prabhupada answers to the above questions are given as follows. 1. GBC members shall remain permanently. If a member leaves, the GBC can appoint new GBC members. 2. Srila Prabhupada said he will appoint several devotees who shall perform initiation in the future, even after his disappearance. The disciples they accept shall be their disciples, and Srila Prabhupada will be their grand spiritual master. 3. New translations of Vedic works can be published in the future even after Srila Prabhupada's departure, but they can only be done by one who is very expert. At present, Srila Prabhupada acknowledged there are very few such men. And then this entry is signed by 18 members of the GBC body. So that's the conversation and how the GBC understood it. But very early, after Prabhupada's departure, this conversation became controversial. The original temp was, what will be the provision for gurus after your departure, Prabhupada? Yes, I shall recommend some of you. I shall recommend some of you ask of officiating acharyas. TKG, is that called Ritvik Acharya? Srila Prabhupada, Ritvik, yes. End of topic, that's it. And what it seemed to me is Prabhupada was beginning to answer the question. My understanding of this conversation, he was asking the question, what's going to happen after your departure? Prabhupada knew this was a big topic of conversation. He knew people were waiting to know this. wasn't that he was like unaware of what was happening. So he knew they were discussing after his departure. He starts to answer. Tamo Krishna introduces this rhythmic idea. Satrup Maharaj sort of goes off barreling along in some slightly other direction, not on the same wavelength. And so they're a little derailed, and then Prabhupada comes back and says, when he says yes, that is formality, the rhythmic part, because in my presence, that is while I'm still here, it's against etiquette, and he said this many, many times, to initiate in the presence of your spiritual master is not done. My presence, one should not become guru. So on my behalf at this time, but later on my honor, Amara Ajnai Guru Hana. He's quoting this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, under my order, on my order, you become guru. That's Chaitanya's order. But on my order. And then later on, he elaborates what he means by this. He repeats this quotation, Amara Ajnai Guru Hana. What does it mean? One who can understand the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can become guru, or one who understands his guru's order, same for Apara, he can become guru. So in other words, guru is somebody who follows the order of his spiritual master very exactly. That's the person. Then, so this was the first conversation that was held. And then, so that was in May, and then in July, there was another conversation and a letter, follow-up letter by Tamal Krishna Goswami. And this was when Prabhupada named the people who would become later on the initiating gurus. At that time, in July, on July 7th, so this, the first one was the end of May, so from the end of May to early July, so 1 month had passed, and Prabhupada seemed to say that I'm going to select some of you who can initiate now, and then after I disappear, you'll become regular gurus. That seems to me, anyway, what Prabhupada actually said. That's how everybody understood it. Then Tamal raises the question to Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Goswami. We receive, people are asking to get initiated. Prabhupada stopped giving initiation for a while because his health was so bad. And they were, since he was ill, the GBC asked them just to wait and don't bother Prabhupada with initiations from now on. We received the letters, people who want to be initiated, and Prabhupada said the local men, senior sannyasis, can do that. And Prabhupada said, well, we were doing that before, that the local GBC chanted on their beads, but they were writing to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was giving them a spiritual name. That was already the system, that when you would get initiated at this time, Prabhupada wouldn't chant on beads and mail them around the world, but there were local people, local sannyasis, who were appointed to chant on their beads, and Prabhupada would give the name and accept them as disciples. So Tamal Krishna says, should that process be resumed, or should we? And then he says, I don't know what to do, and Prabhupada basically delicate says, your health is bad, and we understand the spiritual master takes on karma, so we're a little worried about resuming this process. So maybe we should just wait some more time. And Prabhupada said, no, the senior sannyasis. Tamal Krishna says, so they shall continue to, I mean, in the same way. And then he said, give me a list of sannyasis. And then Prabhupada starts saying, you can do, Kirtanananda can do, and our Satsarup can do. So these three you can give. Begin. Prabhupada Krishna, supposing somebody is in America, should they simply write directly to Kirtananda Satsarup? Prabhupada nearby, meaning whoever is nearby. Jayatirtha can give. Tamal Krishna, Jayatirtha. The prophet starts to say Bhavananda but changes it to Bhagavan, and he can do also Harikesh, Tamal Krishna Harikesh Maharaj, and 5-6 men you divide who is nearest, Tamal Krishna, who's nearest. So people wouldn't have to write to your divine grace. They could write directly to that person. Tamal Krishna actually initiating the person on your divine grace's behalf. Those people who are initiated are still your. Prabhupada, second initiation we shall think over. How to do second initiation. Tamal Krishna, this is for first initiation. Okay. And for second initiation, the time being, they have to wait. Second initiation, that share should be given. Then Tamal says, but some devotees are writing you now for second initiation. And I'm writing to them to wait. Well, you're not well, so what can I tell them? And Prabhupada says, they can do second initiation. Tamal Krishna, by writing you. Prabhupada, no, these men. Tamal Krishna, these men, they can also do second initiation. There's no need for devotees to write to you for first and second initiation. They can write to the man nearest them, but all these people are still your disciples. So anyone who gives initiation is doing so, and here's that same phrase, on your behalf. Prabhupada, yes. And then Tamal Krishna says, if somebody gives initiation, he should send the names to us, and I'll enter into the book with a list of Prabhupada disciples. Okay. And then he says, is there someone else in India you want to do this? Prabhupada, India? I'm here. We shall see. No, in India? Then he says, Jayapataka. Prabhupada says, you're also in India. Tamal Krishna says, yes. You can note down these names. I have them. Who are they? And he reads them off. Akirtananda Maharaj, Satrup Maharaj, Jayatirtha Prabhu, Bhagavan Prabhu, Harikesh Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Prabhupada, that's nice. Now you distribute. Tamal Krishna, seven. There's seven names. For the time being, seven names sufficient. Then he says, you can make Rameshwara. Tamal Krishna, Rameshwara Maharaj, Prabhupada, and Hridayananda. He adds some more. Tamal Krishna says, oh yes, South America. So at least Tamal's thinking of geographical distribution. Prabhupada, so without waiting for me, whoever you consider it is right, that will depend upon discretion. Tamal Krishna, that's your first and second initiation, Prabhupada. Okay. So that's the July 7th conversation. This is called the second appointment tape. So 2 days later, there was a follow-up. There was the letter from Tamal Krishna Goswami, which is now being advertised as the final order, whatever that means. Letter of July 9th, and it was to all GBC and temple presidents. Dear Maharajas and Prabhus, please accept my humble obeisance at your feet. Recently, when all of the GBC members were with His Divine Grace in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada indicated that soon he would appoint some of his senior disciples to act as Rittik, representatives of the Acharya, for the purpose of performing initiations, both first and second initiation. His Divine Grace has so far given a list of 11 disciples who will act in that capacity. And here their names are listed, but there's two more names. Bhavananda and Hamsaduta. Prabhupada waited, thought about it, and then added two more names. And I know a little about why he added them too. And then the same names. In the past, temple presidents who have written to Srila Prabhupada recommending a particular devotee's initiation. Now that Srila Prabhupada has named these representatives, temple presidents may henceforward send recommendations of first and second initiation to whichever of these 11 representatives are nearest their temple. After considering these recommendations, these representatives may accept the devotee as initiated disciple of Srila Prabhupada by giving them a spiritual name. In the case of second initiation, by chanting on Gayatri thread, just as Srila Prabhupada has done. The newly initiated devotees are disciples of His Divine Grace, and the above 11 senior devotees are acting as His representatives. After the temple president receives a letter from the representatives giving the spiritual name or the thread, he can perform the fire yajna in the temple as being done before, and the name should be sent in to be added to Divine Grace Initiation Book. That's the letter. Uh, You can see it's clearly understood here that he relates these 11 people to the conversation in May 28. He said he would soon he would appoint some, and now he's given this list. So they understood that this was in fulfillment of that, say, very soon I shall select some of you. This only mentions Ritvik, because I'll tell you why. Everybody was really praying and hoping very hard and not really believing it was possible, that praying that the Prabhupada would not leave, and didn't think it was possible he would leave, and it would just not have been possible for Tamal Krishna Goswami to send out a letter, everybody talking about what it was going to happen after Prabhupada's departure. Prabhupada's departure was, at least in any kind of official letter, an unthinkable event, although the GBC had gone and asked about it. So that's why it's not in this letter. We were having 24-hour kirtan, or at least it was going to start soon, that Prabhupada wouldn't leave. And so he was just didn't mention what was particularly what was going to happen, but you can see from the GBC minutes they understood that this was how Prabhupada was indicating who should begin initiating after his departure. I tell you why he added Bhavananda and Hamsaduta. He had misgivings about those people, but at the time Bhavananda had just been, Mayapur had just been attacked by a bunch of Muslims who had attacked the Mayapur temple. There was gunfire, fighting. One devotee, what's his name, Maharaj, got his leg, lost a leg in the melee. Bhavananda was arrested, carried off in chains to jail because the local communist government was very anti-ISKCON. And Prabhupada was extremely upset about this incident, and especially the fact that, you know, they were, Bhavananda was a CIA agent and all this other kind of stuff. And Prabhupada considered him almost like a martyr because he had been put in jail and stayed in jail and carried off in chains and spit at and all this kinds of stuff. And in fact, Prabhupada was so upset about this that he instructed Balavanta to begin working to give him American citizenship. And he was talking about, he started talking about how India never appreciated it, huh? American? Yeah. He had American green cards, and now he was thinking, and he started talking about how India never appreciated him, but America, they were always welcome to him, and so on. So he was so upset with this treatment, because the communist government in Bengal was very hostile to ISKCON, and he was also not getting much cooperation from the main government, the Congress Party, and so he was... Anyway, so that was with why Bhavananda. He was very, very, very appreciative at that time of Bhavananda because of what happened with him. Hamsaduta was sort of in exile in Sri Lanka, having created such a disaster in Germany. And he was sent to Sri Lanka to kind of keep him in a safe place. But in Sri Lanka, he got into a big public debate, which I guess was in the newspapers, with a atheist scientist, and Hamsaduta just creamed him and emerged. There was a great victory, and it was all in all the newspapers and everything, and Prabhupada was so proud of that and so impressed by that. And this was another thing that happened just about this time, that was the consideration for adding Hamsaduta's name, at least as far as things were being discussed. So now, when Prabhupada left his body, my understanding is what happened is everybody understood that these were the people who were going to be the initiating gurus. at least at the beginning. Prabhupada had named them in this context, and you know how everybody understood it. My understanding is that the GBC agreed, because Prabhupada left his body in November, that nobody would begin initiating until they had the next GBC meeting, when they would sit and discuss how they're going to do and what's to be done, and all the ideas of protocol and etiquette and everything would be then settled up. But apparently, Kirtanananda began initiating right away on his own. He didn't wait, and immediately started receiving Guru Puja. Actually, Kirtananda, Hamsaduta, both had started getting Guru Puja before Prabhupada departed. And Prabhupada had to rebuke both of them. He called it a premature attempt. And again, he mentioned this letter, the etiquette that it's not to be done while the spiritual master is present. You have to wait till after he parts. This is a premature attempt. And he rebuked him for this, chastised him, as we say in this con, for this premature. There was definitely among the leading men in ISKCON a competitive sort of ladder. I already mentioned it, you know, with initiating guru at the top prize, and there was a lot of idea who's going to be it, who's going to get it, and so on. So this is what happened, and Kirtanananda apparently became a guru in big style right off the bat. I don't know if anybody else initiated first. Hamsaduta, who was the other premature one, I don't know what he did, but apparently Kirtananda was not waiting at all. When the GBC in March of 78 had the Mayapur meeting in India, again it was still clear to everybody that they were supposed to be the initiating gurus. This notion that somehow or other they're supposed to continue as Ritviks after Prabhupada's departure, didn't seem to even occur to anybody, except a little later on. The question was, what's the protocol, the etiquette for guru, and so on. In the 78 meeting, the decision was made by the GBC, because they're interested in protocol and etiquette, to go to Sridhar Maharaj and ask him what to do. This going to Sridhar Maharaj also became quite controversial. Now, just to show you what happened, I copied out things from the GBC, the original GBC minutes. So on the morning of March 19th, 1978, at 9:30 in the morning, they were talking about spiritual masters. And there was a resolution that the GBC will consider each year at Guru Purnima the appointment of new spiritual masters to be approved by a 3/4 vote. So the idea was not that this will be a few people, but new ones will be considered by a 3/4 vote of the GBC body. However, for 1978, no new spiritual masters shall be appointed other than the 11 selected by Srila Prabhupada. Then at 2 p.m., this is recorded, so there was obviously some interesting discussion, which, you know, I'll have to go back and interview people someday and try to find out. A committee of Tamal Krishna Goswami, Hari K. Swami, Kirtanananda Swami, Satrup Goswami, Rupanuga Prabhu, and Jayapataka Swami, all people on that were on the list except for Rupanuga, will report to the GBC as soon as possible regarding the six questions on the GBC agenda concerning the initiations. Definite statements on this subject will be made available to all the devotees after the GBC considers this committee's report. The six questions aren't recorded in the minutes book, but what they did was go to Sridhar Maharaj, whose name is not mentioned here, Prabhupada's godbrother, Sridhar Maharaj, with these questions about initiation. They spoke to him, and they came back, and then that's March 19th. I don't know how long the meetings were. Somewhere along the line, I may have a transcript of that meeting with the GBC and Srila Prabhupada. I know I read it once. I may have the transcript. I couldn't find it in my... I keep all kinds of stuff. I couldn't find it in time for this, because when this committee interviewed Sridhar Maharaj, right, it was recorded and transcribed, and I did see a transcript, and I remember some of it, but I wasn't able to locate it fast enough for this particular report. But I will certainly track one down, and I'm sure somebody, Jayapataka Maharaj or somebody, has got the original tapes. But they asked him their different questions about the initiating guru. But you can see from the evidence on March 21st, a few days later, this is then recorded, a GBC committee will be formed consisting of GBC members who are initiating gurus. They will choose new gurus once per year in Mayapur. This is an amendment to Resolution 16 of March 19th. So you see what happened. Right here it's recorded. What was the difference before and after Sridhar Maharaj? Their initial thing was the GBC body will choose new gurus. After the interview with Sridhar Maharaj, there will be a GBC, a committee of initiating gurus, which later became called the Acharya Board, will select the new spiritual masters. And now, later on, when people begin to realize that the way the spiritual masters were set up for the so-called zonal acharya system wasn't what Prabhupada had in mind, and we had this big meeting in New Vrindavan in 85 about it, Jayapataka Maharaj put out a paper at that meeting called ISKCON Biorhythms, something like that. And in that paper, he says our big mistake was going to Sridhar Maharaj because he misled us. And he laid a lot of the blame for this, the zonal acharya system, at Sridhar Maharaj's direction. People who were following Sridhar Maharaj, like Tripurari, bristled at this paper, and they responded with something else. So the whole thing needs to be, I would have to get all those papers together and look at the conversation again after so much time has passed, and really try to see what really happened in this regard. But it is a fact, I can tell you, that as we know, Sridhar Maharaj did not appreciate the concept of a GBC very much. This is a fact. And Prabhupada directly in his letter holds him responsible for the inability to form a GBC with the illicit installation of an acharya and the subsequent break of the Gaudiya Math. Prabhupada directly holds Sridhar Maharaj responsible for it. So in a way that would show that he had a bias. And as I remember from this conversation, they went to Sridhar Maharaj. He gave them a lot of good advice about understanding that you're always the servant, being humble, the worship is not meant for you, and so on, which if they had followed that, you know, would have been not caught, there wouldn't have been so many problems exactly, but he did say, as far as new gurus and dealing with gurus, and he saw the gurus as superior to everybody else, because when it came to appointing new gurus, selecting new gurus, or dealing with problems arising from any other gurus, he said, the GBC can't do this. And I remember the phrase that he used, how shall the, these are Prabhupada's chosen men. They're his selected men. And he said, how shall the unfit judge the fit? That was clearly Sridhar Maharaj's conception. And because these were named by Srila Prabhupada, they were the select men, the fit. And the others were unfit. Now, how much, you know, that was brought to this meeting by the GBC, these are Prabhupada's select chosen few, or not, or how much was his idea, I don't know. But he definitely had this idea, and reinforced it, if they had it, that the GBC was inferior to the gurus. And the GBC issued a paper, the process for carrying out Srila Prabhupada's desire for future initiations, a paper presented by the GBC in consultation with higher authorities, the higher authorities being Srila Sridhar Maharaj. That's who the higher authority was. That was a paper, now hard to find, that the GBC pointed out. And it was, then you don't see much in the minutes about what actually happened, but out of that meeting, there was a certain hierarchy established that the GBCs would, for most part, have their own initiating zones, where they were the initiating guru. This zone became known in the GBC minutes and parlance as the Prabhu Datta Desh, the place given by Srila Prabhupada, or the Guru Datta Desh. And the sort of features of this program is that as they became the Acharya, they also were worshipped and respected by their godbrothers as though the godbrothers were their own disciples. So they were elevated above their own godbrothers. And the system was established that there would be, and there's nothing in the GBC minutes about this, maybe in this letter, this paper, which I may have a copy of, I couldn't find that either, that there was, the system was that there was, in the temple room, there was already Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. And there was installed in the temple room two additional Vyasa-sanas, one to the right and one to the left of Srila Prabhupada. The one to the right, on Prabhupada's right, was the Vyasa-sana, which was only used by the local Acharya, the initiating guru. The other one was called the guest Vyasa-sana, that if an Acharya from some other area would come and visit, he would sit in that one. And sometimes I remember going to places where there was a lot of the initiating gurus, and they'd have a whole bunch of Vyasa-sanas lined against the wall when there was a big meeting like that. And at the Guru Puja, when Prabhupada received Guru Puja in the morning, there was at the same time Guru Puja going on for whoever happened to be the local Acharya. Prabhupada would be receiving Guru Puja, and there'd be somebody doing the arti to Prabhupada, and sitting right next to him on the Vyasa-sana, either the local initiating guru or somebody on the guest Vyasa-sana, or both, and there were pujaris doing arti to them at the same time. This was called, came to be known as simultaneous Guru Puja. So that meant that when you went to Prabhupada's Guru Puja, even if you were Prabhupada's disciple, of course, the very beginning, almost everybody was in the first year or so, still you would attend everybody's Guru Puja, whoever happened to be present, whatever guru was present. And of course, when it came time to offer flowers, you offer flowers first to Prabhupada, then to whoever is sitting there, Tamo Krishna Goswami, your Hari Kes, whoever was there. If you didn't feel like it, you were sort of forced to do it anyway, you know. Otherwise, you'd be known as an envious demon. So this was the arrangement with these Vyasa Sanas. You don't see what came to be the zonal acharya system. You don't really see any explicit GBC resolution setting up the system, but it just sort of happened. And actually, when the reform movement was there, the argument is there's no such system because we show me a resolution that set it up. But what I realized is that the symbol of the old system was this exclusive Vyasasana. And so when the reform came about, we wanted to take apart, we really only had one particular ritualistic concern. Only have one other Vyasasana in the temple for any guru. And that would bring, brought down this. Because why this exclusive seat? That's the seat at the head of the institution. Then, by August of that same year, Prajumna Das wrote a now famous letter to Satsarup Maharaj. Prajumna had been Prabhupada's Sanskrit secretary. And Prabhupada had asked told Prajumna to complete the translation of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was like a pundit, you know, he was that kind of a guy. Prabhupada called it Panditji. He called him once an American smarta. The only American smarta I ever met, he says. You used to get all these different books about auspicious and inauspicious times. But this letter later on became very important. I can't remember whether I ever saw it at the early date. Maybe I did. But it at first had no effect. It should be in these papers I handed out. Is it? Yeah. It's at the very end. Yeah, actually, when this was originally set out as I sent it out as an appendix to a paper I wrote called "Under My Order," which was the sort of paper of the reform group that got wide acceptance. Because everything I really realized what was wrong was contained in Prajumna's letter of August 1978. He really saw that what we felt was wrong. And just this last year, the GBC has issued a formal apology to Prajumna, because as we'll see, he ended up getting treated pretty roughly, partially because of this letter. So if you see in this letter, he says to Satsarup Maharaj, the matter concerns the God brothers who were selected by Srila Prabhupada to accept disciples. At the time of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, it was most clearly understood by all of us present that Srila Prabhupada had made no successor. Everyone admitted that fact and understood it clearly. Instead, the GBC was to jointly manage all affairs in ISKCON, just as had been the case previously. He mentions that Bhakti Siddhanta didn't make any successor. In addition to the GBC management, Srila Prabhupada also selected 11 somewhat advanced disciples to grant initiation to newcomers. However, it was never mentioned at any time by His Divine Grace that these 11 were to be known as Acharyas. He simply instructed they may not accept disciples. In other words, as it was understood in practice at that time, there was no special position given to these 11. Either in society as a whole or in relation to their other god brothers. Management would depend upon the joint GBC, and among god brothers and sisters, all are on the same level, with the exception of some special regard and respect shown to older senior disciples by the god brothers and god sisters who are junior. Now at present, I understand that the 11 gurus are one, adopting the title of Acharya. 2, sitting on high Vyasasanas in front of Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasana and their own god brothers. 3, accepting worship in great respect normally reserved for a guru from the rest of their god brothers. And 4, the previous GBC zones have all been given by mutual agreement or by invitation among the different acharyas. Well, there were still the GBC zones. But what happened is usually there was one person who was an initiating guru in a certain geographical area. If that person was a GBC, it was zone, but then a GBC who wasn't an initiating guru, somebody else was also initiating in his zone. So that the zones were a person's own place, that he was a GBC, plus some others where somebody else was a GBC. Then he talks about different senses of the word acharya. It means one who teaches by example, one who simply is a guru. But the special word, special meaning, he says here, the word acharya indicates the spiritual head of an institution, or pitta. This meaning is very specific. It doesn't mean just anyone. It means only one who has personally, who has been specifically declared by the previous acharya to be his successor, above all others, to the seat of the spiritual institution which he heads. It's a very precise definition. He alone among all of his god brothers is given a raised seat and special honor. No other god brother may receive such respect and the authority in all spiritual material matters. Notice authority in all spiritual and material matters. This is the strict tradition in all of the Gaudiya Sampradayas. This is Pujunya's observation of what happened to be going on. He had lived in India for a long time. He nosed around everywhere. He read all kinds of books. And he saw what everybody was doing. He said, this is the strict tradition. So head of the institution points his successor, who then follows this system. Now, Srila Prabhupada, it is clear, did not appoint any such successor because none of his disciples at present is advanced to the level of Krishna consciousness necessary to assume such a position. Nor did he make 11 such acharyas. This was never mentioned by him. They were only given permission to make disciples, and the GBC was to jointly manage materially and spiritually. There was never any distinction made by Srila Prabhupada between material management and spiritual management. So I think that's the essence of this letter. He goes on to many details. But that's the essence of what Prajumna was talking about. So this letter came out. It was written to Satsrup Maharaj. Satsrup Maharaj replied, and I don't know what his reply was. But in any case, nothing changed. And then the next big event that happened... In February of 79, just before the GBC, next GBC meeting, there was a big blow-up, and a bunch of GBCs, I don't know how many, came to Vrindavan, where there was a kind of a protest against this system. Pradyumna was part of it, and a whole bunch of others. There was a paper written. It's a 36-page paper with 21 signatures, among them Yasodhananda Swami, Jagadguru, now Swami, now in the Gaudiya Math, Danadhar Das now Swami, Ayojapati now Bibi Govinda Swami. There was a whole bunch of senior Prabhupada disciples there in Vrindavan signed this letter, this presentation to the GBC, 36 pages. Again, a protest about the extreme, what they thought is the extreme elevation of the successor charges above everybody else, and so on. There was a confrontation, and it was apparently very heavy with the GBC. I mean, people were hiding in their rooms and running around. I've heard various descriptions of this kind of thing. And the GBC came down very, very heavy. I mean, it was really heavy. Because there was a concern on the part of the GBC that unless the authority, as they understood it, of the new gurus was accepted, then the whole movement might fall apart. There could not be any doubts about these people. One had to establish the authority of the new gurus. It was absolutely essential. Otherwise, the whole preaching mission would go. They thought you had to have some kind of replacement, I guess, in people's eyes, the new devotees' eyes, for Srila Prabhupada. You had to build their faith. Therefore, there was a great deal of support among many, many Prabhupada disciples for this this system. They thought it was necessary. And so, you know, this protest, while it was there and while it was heavy, was not general and widespread. In fact, I can read you a statement. When finally we had this this big, huge Ishtagosthi of Prabhupada disciples in New Vrindavan, which I think in this zone was referred to as a Daksha Yajna. Keeps coming up, huh, doesn't it? And in response to that, we published it. That big Ishtagosthi was taped, and I have a transcript of it, what actually happened and what was said. And one of the people that stood and spoke up was Vipramukya Swami, who was right after this, right in the very beginning, the Bhakta leader at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And so he says, now this is from this meeting in 85, some years later now, but he says this, my name is Vipramukya Swami. All the devotees are in a big room. I'll talk about this meeting later, but what he said is relevant now. And people are standing up and talking, and the GBC is present also, and the acharyas, and for the first time everybody's sitting on the same level. This was like a big breakthrough. It was all Prabhupada disciples. My name is Vipramukya Swami, and I am now preaching in New York. Perhaps some of you may know me in my more vigorous days as Bhakta leader in England. There are a number of devotees here who were working with me at that time, including Dhanavir Prabhu, Vichitravirya Prabhu, Boma Dev, and others. I would like to describe a little bit about the history of what I saw to be what we called at that time the smooth transition. That was the big concern, that there'd be a smooth transition after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. There'd be what the scholars sometimes call a transfer of charisma. After Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, I perceived that there was a need to have someone like Srila Prabhupada as a figurehead to replace Srila Prabhupada's position in our society. And I even understood from so many of my GBC godbrothers that they, and then the rest is, nobody could, you can't, it's not audible. So I began actively cultivating the Bhakta program newsletter and began preaching among the devotees in the English Yatra. Devotees came from all over the world to see how we were making so many devotees. I began preaching very enthusiastically that these ISKCON gurus should be afforded the same kind of respect that was afforded to Srila Prabhupada. Now I would like to change my position. I was criticized once by one GBC man that I was the person beating the drum, so therefore I had no right to make any comment. But I would like to say that because I was one of the first ones beating the drum, that I should have some right to make a comment. I feel that we have made some mistakes in the way we have presented the ISKCON Acharyas in the absence of Srila Prabhupada's physical presence. So this is his take on the situation. And he tells, anyway. So that's what it was like. Many, many people were supporting this system. People needed somebody to focus on, just like Prabhupada. We had to build faith in these new people. Therefore, the guru pujas, big ceremonies, worship, and stuff like that. That was what the idea was. But there was also this protest. So there it was in Vrindavan. Well, things got a little heavier in 79, and there was something of a crisis in 79 at the Bombay Temple. And here again comes the name of Tamal Krishna Goswami. He was there as the Acharya, or one of them anyway. I think he showed up there. And apparently he... was very heavy. The story I've heard is that he went into the temple room and saw the Vyasasana for the Acharya and decided it was not sufficiently big. And so he would go to his room and refuse to come to the temple room until they had built one that was sufficiently grand to recognize the position of the Acharya. And anyway, he was... it was pretty heavy. And there was at the temple a devotee named Amogha Lila Das, who was the Bhakta leader. And Amogha Lila, who's now just gotten a degree from Berkeley, Amogha Lila, in his previous, before he was a devotee, had been a psychic. And all of a sudden, under this, he was under a lot of strain to build up faith in the present acharyas and everything else, just like Vipramukha. But he felt very upset with some of the dealings he was having with these people, and so he was feeling this stress in his position. And in that condition, he began to channel Srila Prabhupada. I think what he did was automatic writing. You know, where you just go in sort of semi-trance state and your hand sort of writes by itself, and it was Prabhupada. And I've got them. I got all the transcripts of this because a few years later they started to circulate all around the movement, at least among Prabhupada disciples. They're called the Amogha Lila letters. It's funny though, they have no names, but anyway, he started channeling Srila Prabhupada, and he was putting forward questions to Prabhupada about the status of the new gurus and some of the behavior that he thought was arrogant or puffed up and stuff like that. And Prabhupada was heavy on them. See, and he had Prabhupada's voice down pretty good. And the main issue that was concerning everybody then that this focused on was simultaneous guru puja. That many people were getting to feel more and more uneasy that guru puja for Prabhupada and a new guru was given at the same time. People felt that how can you sit there and receive guru puja when your spiritual master is being worshipped? Shouldn't you be offering puja to him instead of receiving it yourself? It seemed like something was wrong with that. And also because it compelled everybody, including your godbrothers, whether they felt like it or not, to also attend your guru puja. So it was controversial.
So Prabhupada
announced in Amoga Lita's channeling that it was wrong, that there should not be simultaneous Guru Puja. And it's very good. It sounded just like Prabhupada. And one snatch I can remember now is Amoga Lila says to Prabhupada, but they say that if the Guru Pujas are separate, that everybody will attend their Guru Puja, but nobody will attend yours. Prabhupada, let them worry about their Guru Pujas and I'll worry about mine. And so it really sounded a lot like Prabhupada in many places. And there were different opinions. I mean,
was he with different voices?
No, I think it was in writing. He wasn't going to trance and speak like the Ram entity or whatever. But it was by automatic writing. But he began to do this on a regular basis. People were, collecting these, and gradually they were taken around. There were people that believed that he was actually in touch with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had now come in this form through Amoga Lila to give us instruction. Other people thought, well, you know, this is maybe Amoga Lila's way of expressing his own realization, or it's Super Soul, but he's really not channeling Prabhupada. Because the true believers are ready to install Amoga Lila as something like the Oracle of Delphi, where everybody would go and submit questions to Prabhupada. And it did get a little weird at the end, because people were starting to go to Prabhupada. I'm thinking about getting married, but I'm not sure if it should be this one or that one. We got really kind of tacky, you know, from the elevated issues of Guru to this sort of stuff. And but that was that was something that happened, this Amoga Lila thing. Amoga Lila began channeling some years later again, when we had the disruption about Kirtananda Swami. And in this kind of channeling, Prabhupada was recommending that we understand that Kirtananda is a pure devotee. I took objection to this, and I noticed that when he was channeling Prabhupada made a mistake in Sanskrit. So I responded to this by saying, I don't think this is Prabhupada because of this mistake. And I show where Prabhupada, actually in a lecture, had talked about people who make this mistake. And I said to the Amoga Lila, I think that somebody is, you know, broadcasting. Somebody else is broadcasting on Prabhupada's wavelength. I've seen stuff again. Amoga Lila is now again apparently channeling Prabhupada, who now is saying, giving some endorsement to Narayan Maharaj. But I wouldn't accept it. At the time, I wouldn't accept Amoga Lila as a. I thought what was being said was interesting, and it was kind of a nice way to. It was about the only way anybody could criticize the new gurus, by having Prabhupada's voice do it, you know, because nobody else could do it. So I took it in that way. So that happened sometime in 79. And I think then later on the papers circulated, 80 or 81, they started to circulate widely throughout ISKCON, the channeling Prabhupada. And the issues are very interesting to see what they were talking about, what they were worried about. And then also in 1980, there was a kind of little breakaway group. There's a devotee named, a godbrother of mine named Kailas Chandra, who, his name keeps popping up. He was there in Vrindavan when there was this first big protest. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention the result of this Vrindavan meeting is that the GBC removed the service of translating from Prajumna. They had lost confidence. One thing, he was very, very slow, and that was one thing. But they had lost confidence in him because of his opposition. And also, he's reported to have said something about They can read my purports and find out what a guru is supposed to be, or something like that, which was a little hard to take. And so then Hridayananda Maharaj was given the job of continuing with the Bhagavatam. But the person Prabhupada really originally named was Prajumna. And it was very rough the way he was dealt with. That's why the GBC finally issued an apology all these years later. So anyway, but Kailas Chandra was also present at this meeting. Kailas Chandra is a person who told me that he considers himself an agent of Lord Shiva. That's the name of Lord Shiva, is Kailas Chandra, whose job is to purify ISKCON by destruction. He's one of these guys that's really completely on the psychic, mystical, you know, plane. Anyway, he was in California, and he got together with Jadarani, who actually they got married. There was a period of time while Jadarani and Kailas Chandra were married. And Jadarani began distributing these papers. There were five papers that she was handing out. The first one called The Appointment That Never Was. And Kailas Chandra told me that actually he wrote the papers. He took credit for it. I don't know how much if that's true. But he stayed in the background, and Jadarani was the active person. I remember being in Los Angeles at somebody's house, and she came in and handed out these papers to everybody. And their position was, the position that was argued in this paper with great conviction, was the guru had to be a Mahabhagavata, a certified, topmost resident of Vrindavan, liberated soul. It was clear that none of the 11 acharyas or whoever they were anything like that. In fact, it was clear that there was nobody who was fit to be a guru present. She was particularly skating on Satsarupa Maharaj, who she had been married to at one time, and Jadarani hated the book Prabhupada Lilamrita. She thought it was completely offensive because it made Prabhupada seem like an ordinary person. Her idea about Prabhupada, like if you're sitting in a room and there was a noise next door and Prabhupada said, go find out what that is. Prabhupada already knew what it was, and he just did that as Leela to pretend to be an ordinary person. But to me, she had this idea about Prabhupada that was something like God. And so she didn't like the book Prabhupada Lilamrita because Prabhupada has worries about the future, is concerned about that, and so on, has human feelings, which is not to be taken seriously. So anyway, she wrote these papers about how the guru had to be a Mahabhagavata. She had her quotes lined up. These people clearly weren't. And that the appointment that never was, they claimed that the appointment tape, there was a partial version of this appointment tape. That was the first time I ever saw it, was in one of Jadarani's papers. And the whole thing wasn't there. And they claimed that it was doctored by the GBC. That the background noise changes and there were pops and clicks and everything, and that the GBC had obviously put it together out of bits and snippets to make it sound as though Prabhupada were actually seriously thinking that these people could be gurus. And that was how she dealt with that tape. Then I got shortly thereafter a copy of the tape, and there were a lot of pops and clicks and noise and changes in background, and finally I was able to get the BBT archive to send me a clean copy, and it was clear then the pops and clicks were gone. That was just an artifact of being copied and recopied and recopied. And in a clear version, you could hear that the changes in background noise are because somebody was turning a fan on and off while Prabhupada was talking. But she was convinced that the tape was a forgery. Her solution to this problem was that one had to wait for the emergence of the self-effulgent Acharya. That was her position. No one is fit. Anything like a Ritvik position she didn't consider as valid, any idea like that that Prabhupada could continue to initiate. But you should wait for the next self. Nobody should take initiation until the emergence of the next self-effulgent Acharya. Her karmi name was Judy Guarino. And so Hridayananda called this Judaism, waiting for the Messiah. and so that kind of was very strong. And Kailas Chandra was vigorously critical of the GBC already, and so much so that if we look at the GBC resolutions in 79. There's a resolution. This is the only resolution anything remotely about gurus, that the yearly GBC secretary will write a letter to all ISKCON centers warning about the poisonous activities of Kailas Chandra Das. So he was already causing up a lot of anti-guru sentiment and quite venomous, actually. His close associate was Paranjana, the current web meister of guru hate and so on. And Kailas Chandra will come up again in this narrative. He's a very mysterious figure, and he's already there, always sort of there. So while this is going on, again now in 1980, in May of 1980, there was a GBC emergency meeting. The GBC calls an extraordinary general meeting, but we usually just call it an emergency meeting of the GBC body in Los Angeles, and they had some issues to deal with. The issues were the activities of Hamsa Duda, Jayatirtha, and Tamo Krishna Goswami. This is what was happening. Jayatirtha was starting to have these very long, 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 interminable kirtans that he would chant, accompanied by shrieks and screams and rolling on the floor and stuff like that. And so they were worried about this. They thought it was Sahajiism. And after this, apparently the cure was that he would take sannyas. He was married. Two people were married who were named by Prabhupada, Bhagavan and Jayatirtha. There was a lot of pressure from everybody else that they take sannyas. Bhagavan did right away, and then the pressure was on Jayatirtha. And then after this emergency meeting, Jayatirtha took sannyas. But that was the concern with him. Tamo Krishna Goswami had finally had to leave Bombay, where he had been so heavy, and I think the leading God brothers, Giriraj Maharaj and whoever else was there, they finally managed to get him to leave Bombay, and he went back to the United States. The criminal one was Hamsa Duda. He had somehow escaped from Sri Lanka and was established in Berkeley in the United States, and he was beginning to collect guns and he had problems with women, booze, and guns. As they say in America, intoxication with illicit sex and a special fondness for gun collecting. And that had started with Hamsaduta already. The GBC emergency meeting in 1980 dealt with that. Although there's nothing on the regular GBC minutes, and they should have kept minutes of this emergency meeting, but they didn't, or they don't survive. And Hamsaduta was, I don't know exactly how he was dealt with. I have to do a little more research at this particular time. But the GBC did some kind of sanction. I know what they did with Tamal Krishnan. They again said he should go to China. Back to China. And Bhagavan was going to come in and take over his zone. With Jayatirtha, I'm not sure what the, but he was in some ways or other sanctioned by the GBC. I can't remember now what it is. I mean, not Jayatirtha, Hamsaduta. Jayatirtha was taking sannyas. At the same time, in the same year, a few months later, from Los Angeles came a paper called The Position of the Initiating Guru in the Western Zone, USA. This was a paper compiled by, I guess, a number of senior Prabhupada disciples. And the paper had the endorsement of Rameshwar Swami, which the paper argued that the current gurus, or a guru can be a Majjhima Adhikari. The GBC official position was that the gurus were all Uttama Adhikaris. That was the official person. There's one quotation from the Nectar of Instruction which describes an Uttama Adhikari can be known by his ability to preach Krishna consciousness and convert many, many people to Krishna consciousness. A definition of an Uttama Adhikari is a big preacher. And on that quote, this claim was mostly set forward. They were to be considered Uttama Adhikaris. That was the official doctrine. These 11 were Maha Bhagavatas, or at least Uttama Adhikaris, a difference. But so this was a radical paper that the gurus were Majjhima Adhikari. Rameshwar endorsed it, although with how much enthusiasm I don't know. He was under a lot of social pressure from his godbrothers, and he moved his big Vyasasana out of the temple room because he was now going to be. It was thought, I don't know where this comes from, it was thought that the level of worship of a Majjhima Adhikari guru is less than that of an Uttama Adhikari guru. This theory is still around, but I've yet to see any documentation for this idea. Maybe it's common sense, but anyway. So that's what he did. Then, when that happened, there was another, the GBC Executive Committee gathered together in Dallas, Texas, and called Rameshwar in before itself, and apparently they were pretty heavy on Rameshwar, because later on he called what he did, endorsing this paper and removing the Vyasasana, as a suicidal impulse. Those were his words. It was a suicidal impulse. And the GBC issued a response, which was signed by the Executive Committee. That year it was Bhagavan, Das Goswami, Jagadish Goswami, and Jayabhataka Swami. They signed this response, and the of course it was issued by, I mean, it was a GBC paper, and it defended the position that the current gurus are Uttama Adhikaris. That's what happened. Meanwhile, Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hamsaduta got together, and in a mood of humility, Tamal Krishna Goswami and Hamsaduta gathered at a place right outside of Los Angeles. There's a very interesting feature of geography called Topanga Canyon. And up in Topanga Canyon, the sort of, I guess you'd call them rich hippies live in their little houses, and their special sort of houses. And there's one house that was called the Pyramid House because it was a pyramid. And so we have a preaching center there, at least had been, at the Pyramid House. So there was like a kind of meeting with Tamal Krishna and the other devotees at the Pyramid House. And a transcript went out called The Pyramid House Talks. And Tamal Krishna at that time and Hamsa Duda are in a mood of repentance. Let me find out. I think I have this part of this Pyramid House talk in here. In the Pyramid House talk, in this mood of repentance, Tamal Krishna Goswami says that they misunderstood the selection of Guru when it happened. This talk has been advertised by Ritvix as Tamal Krishna convincing that Prabhupada wanted a perpetual Ritvix system, but that's not what he has talked about at all. That they're just, this is just lying propaganda, out and out cheating. It's not even an innocent mistake, it's a deliberate mistake. But they're at this is December, right at the end of 1980. I'll just read you a few things that he said. We'll find a good place to start. In this regard, he's talking about humility. In this regard, I've had a certain realization a few days ago. I've been speaking with Hamsa Duda Maharaj and Atreya Rishi and with Bhavananda Maharaj also, and all their conclusions were that somehow we should open up this point of initiation, the guru, to whoever is qualified. See, right now it was considered pretty much an exclusive, you know, these are the selected men, the selected few. There are obviously so many statements by Srila Prabhupada that his Guru Maharaj did not appoint any successors. Many times Prabhupada said there should be millions of gurus. This world requires millions of gurus. Even in Prabhupada's books he says guru means by qualification. Anyway, there's so many statements. But there was one thing that was stopping my agreeing to this point, because this was the point now of many people. That this, what's wrong is this this idea that there's something exclusive to a few people. But there was one thing that was stopping my agreeing to this point, which was that I had personally seen how Prabhupada appointed these people, these 11 persons. And he mentions the documents where the five of us went to Prabhupada and asked what about when someone is guru after Prabhupada's disappearance. Prabhupada said yes. The next time is there's a recording and Prabhupada named them. I read you that one. The next time is the letter that Tamal Krishna wrote that Prabhupada signed. These are the three documents. This was standing in my way of appreciating their point. Although their point had great value to appreciate, that if someone is qualified, why should he not be making disciples? Why is it that some people have this position and others don't? Are they ever going to get it? And then he says, actually, Prabhupada never appointed any gurus. He didn't appoint 11 gurus. He appointed 11 Ritviks. He never appointed them gurus. Myself and the other GBC have done the greatest disservice to this movement the last 3 years because we interpreted the appointment of Ritviks as the appointment of gurus. Now, this statement is just excised from the content, a context, and put in another context. What actually happened, I'll explain. I explained it, but the interpretation is wrong. What actually happened was that Prabhupada mentioned that he might appoint some Ritviks. So the GBC met for various reasons, and they went to Prabhupada, five or six of us. We asked them, Srila Prabhupada, after your departure, if we accept disciples, whose disciples will they be, your disciples or mine? Later on, there was a piled up list of people to get initiated, and it was jammed up. And I said, Srila Prabhupada, you once mentioned about Rithiks. I don't know what to do. We don't want to approach you, but there's hundreds of devotees named, and I'm just holding all these letters. I don't know what you want to do. So Prabhupada said, all right, I will appoint so many. And he started to name them, and he did name them. He made it very clear that they're his disciples. At this point, it was very clear in my mind that they were his disciples. Later on, I asked him two questions. What about Brahmananda Swami? I asked this because I had an affection for Brahmananda Swami. I don't know. I asked him because somehow... Anyway, I asked him. The Prabhupada said, no, not unless he's qualified. Before I got ready to type the letter, this is the letter of July 9th, I asked him, Srila Prabhupada, is this all or do you want to add more? He said, as necessary, others may be added. Now I understand that what he did was very clear. He was physically incapable of performing the function of initiation physically. Therefore, he appointed officiating priests to initiate on his behalf. He appointed 11, and he said very clearly, whoever is nearest, he can initiate. Now, this is a very important point, because when it comes to initiation, it isn't who is nearest, it's where your heart goes. But when it's officiating, it's whoever is nearest. He was very clear. He named them.
Yes, but please call later.
And that what he did with that letter was meant for while Prabhupada was present. And that's all it was, and it was never any more than that. If it had been more than that, can you bet your bottom dollar that Prabhupada would have spoken for days and hours and weeks and then on how to set up this thing with the gurus. But he didn't, because he had already said it a million times. He said, my guru did not appoint anyone, it is by qualification. Which is exactly what he says in the May 28th tape. Whoever understands the order of his guru, he's guru. We made a great mistake. After Prabhupada's departure, what is the position of these 11 people? Obviously, Srila Prabhupada felt that of all the people, these people are particularly qualified. So it stands to reason that after Prabhupada's departure, they would go on, if they so desired, to initiate. So anyone who is spiritually qualified... It's always been understood that you cannot accept disciples in the presence of your guru, but when the guru disappears, you can accept disciples if you're qualified, and someone can repose their faith. And then he says, if you're a proper guru and your guru is no longer present, it's your right to accept disciples. Unfortunately, the GBC did not recognize this point. They immediately supposed that these 11 people are the selected gurus. See, this is what Tamal Krishna says the mistake is, that these 11 people are the selected gurus. I can say definitely for myself, and for which I humbly beg forgiveness for everybody, that there was definitely some degree of trying to control. There's a degree of this in most GBC's parts, in most temple presidents' parts. This is the conditioned nature, and it came out in the highest position of all. Guru, oh wonderful, now I'm the guru, and there's only 11 of us. I don't mean to say it was my all-encompassing approach. Please don't misunderstand me, but this is what led us to this pitfall. The GBCs who were gurus said, I'm next in line. This has screwed up our movement terribly. It has very much hurt our movement because it has left so many godbrothers in a frustrated position, very, very frustrated, and is dampening their enthusiasm and has held back the preaching mission. So anyway, that's his take on this in this Topanga house talk. Also, what happened is somehow or other Tamal Krishna Goswami having and Hamsa Duda, I think after this talk, went to see Sridhar Maharaj. And here things get very difficult because Sridhar Maharaj was very bitter. Hamsa Duda was very bitter about the fact that the GBC had come down heavy on him. And Shuddha Maharaj seemed to give support to the gurus and seemed to give support to the idea that the GBC really had no business dealing with the gurus in that way. So that was in 1980. These were the crises that had begun to happen already. In 81, the GBC issued a paper at the GBC meeting called The Descending Process of Selecting a Spiritual Master, which sort of reaffirmed the current system of gurus, and it was released to the society. But in 81, they changed something, that by unanimous decision of the Governing Body Commission, it resolves that there shall be a separate special Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada in the temple. In other words, simultaneous Guru Puja came to an end. That one controversial point. And this is what the GBC began to do. They began to make small incremental changes in this system. So that was what they did in 81. They gave some more. There's some legislation about what the Acharya Committee shall do to set standards for gurus and propose policies and things like that, and guidelines for the behavior of the Acharyas. But the Acharya Committee will do that. And they said that the GBC members who are initiating guru have the power to nominate new initiating gurus. Which had to be confirmed by the GBC. So the GBC now has a confirming role. Then you start to see this sequence of resolutions. This is in the book. The first letter, that there'll be a letter drafted by Jayatirtha Swami, which includes additions by Atreya Rishi, this letter be sent to HDG Srila Hamsadutta Swami, and that a committee of HDG Srila Bhavananda Goswami, HDG Srila Dhammakrishna Goswami, HDG Srila Jayatirtha Goswami, His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Dhammada Swami. See, Bhakti Swarup Dhammada is not initiating guru, so he's His Holiness, but the others are His Divine Grace, Srila, and His Grace Atreya Rishi meet personally with Srila Hamsadutta. Next one, the next day, that HGG Bhavananda Das Goswami and His Divine Grace Dhammakrishna Goswami will go to meet with His Divine Grace Hamsadutta Swami and will dedicate their hearts to stay and talk with Him as long as necessary. 2 days later, if Hamsadutta Maharaj, notice the name change now, if Hamsadutta Maharaj tenders his resignation from the Governing Body Commission, then the GBC chairman is empowered to accept it. Next, if there is any attack in any way from Hamsadutta Maharaj or of his men on any devotee or any ISKCON temple, he will be suspended from ISKCON until the next Mayapur festival. The officers' committee, I think that's the executive committee, has the right to push this expansion in effect. So there was big problems with Hamsadutta at that point. I think by this time, I have to check out the timing, but he was attracting the position of the press and the police, and it was creating quite a big scandal. He had a kind of survivalist mentality, and I think later the year they had an emergency meeting in which he was expelled. while he got to be so heavy, his activities. And I believe they had done something pretty rough at the Berkeley Temple. I said I'll have to check out all the exact stuff with this. I mean, I remember seeing all the newspaper clippings and things like that. It was a huge scandal in America with Hamsa Dutta. So already there was problems. And then the same meeting, they took some action against Kailas Chandra, who was still up to his hostile activity. I don't remember what it says here. So then, then what happened at the 1982 GBC meeting was a crisis with Jayantirtha Goswami. You had to remember that Sridhar Maharaj, meanwhile, what had happened with Sridhar Maharaj is senior devotees had gone to see him. He's older, very much older than everybody else. Prabhupada's godbrother, a brahmana, very learned in the scriptures and knew how to speak with authority. And the GBC members were just kids by comparison. And when they went to see him, it was proper that they approach him, the GBC members, as an authority, because he's senior and we're junior. That's the natural thing. So he naturally took that position. So some people at that time got closer and closer relationships with Sridhar Maharaj. He kind of started giving them shiksha and discussing things with them. And this became, over the course of time, a bit of trouble. Because Sridhar Maharaj was now, sort of power in and around ISKCON. But on the other hand, he did not feel in any way he was answerable to or accountable to the GBC. So the GBC had different rules. One of them was, if a person wants to become a sannyas, there's all these checks and balances and procedures to go through to try to make sure this person is qualified. They kept making it harder because sannyasis had been falling down. But without asking anybody, Sridhar Maharaj would give sannyas to people. And suddenly we had sannyasis in ISKCON who were given sannyas by Sridhar Maharaj independently of the GBC. And so there was a gradually tension building up with Sridhar Maharaj, and especially the temple presidents found it very difficult that people were preaching that everybody should surrender to him. He's the one that's pure. There began this propaganda that somehow or other he was the brains behind Prabhupada, the Prabhupada's silent partner. By people who had gone over to him. Most devotees in ISKCON remembered Prabhupada's letter warning against associating too much with his godbrothers, and they felt that and Prabhupada specifically mentioned Sridhar Maharaj in that letter, and that we shouldn't do it. They're beginning to think that Sridhar Maharaj was, to some extent, didn't help anyway. It may have caused harm when it came to setting up the zonal acharya system. And that when the GBC wanted to take sanctions against different gurus, they would go to Sridhar Maharaj and he would side with them against the GBC. They didn't like the idea of the GBC. So these tensions were developing gradually with Sridhar Maharaj. And people were preaching, that he was giving us deeper realizations or a higher truth than Srila Prabhupada, this kind of thing. And you had people working under him and who weren't... it was like a kind of threat to the integrity of ISKCON, the unity of ISKCON, people felt. So in 83, at the GBC meeting, or 80, excuse me, yeah, 82 GBC meeting, Jayatirtha became an issue. The first thing that happened in 82 is the GBC was trying to loosen up this restriction. This idea that these were the select chosen few was beginning to get a little weak. And they changed it back to having the GBC three-fourths. The GBC could give somebody their blessings, they call it, to become an initiating guru. The Acharya committee was over, was finished, that special committee, the GBC now are the ones that would have new people become initiating gurus. And Panchajivita, Bhakti Swarup Damodar, and Gopal Krishna Goswami were the first three people given the permission to begin initiating after the original 11. That was in 82. And they gave very different considerations and qualifications for somebody to become an acharya, what he should be like, because they were going to broaden it now, get rid of this exclusive business. But then what happened with Jayatirtha was somebody had discovered that Jayatirtha was keeping on had a fairly close relationship with Sridhar Maharaj. They found pictures and writings of Sridhar Maharaj in his room, and this was brought up to the GBC, and they didn't seem to be too worried about it, but the temple presidents were very upset about this relationship. They didn't want to have they were at this point much concerned about Sridhar Maharaj. And so there was the GBC then told Jayatirtha that he had to break off this relationship. He said that Sridhar Maharaj is a Shiksha Guru, so the GBC said they had to break off this relationship with Sridhar Maharaj. Jayatirtha refused, and he decided that he was going to leave ISKCON and go take shelter of Sridhar Maharaj. He went, as they say, across the river to Sridhar Maharaj's temple. At that point, Rameshwara revealed something he had known for, I don't know how long, that Jayatirtha was taking LSD, had been, and continued to take LSD. The other difficulty with Jayatirtha was that there were circulating among ISKCON tapes of his kirtans with these shrieks, these hollers, these roaring on the rolling on the floors. And while some people thought this was transcendental ecstasy, a lot of people thought it was just weird. I mean, people remember being in the Detroit temple where he was initiating guru, and he would go in the temple room at 10 o'clock and he would chant into a microphone, and it would go until 5 o'clock in the evening, and it would be broadcast in every room in the building, and it was this, you know, on and on and on with these strange sounds and things like that. And some of these tapes were being passed around ISKCON. Well, it turns out that he was tripping on acid while he was doing this. Jayatirtha had been, before he became a devotee, a fairly close associate of one Dr. Timothy Leary, one of the leaders of the LSD movement, at least the one on the East Coast, and had dropped acid with Tim Leary at Millbrook and this other kind of stuff. And apparently Jayatirtha, once he was understood that he was an Uttam Adhikari and a resident of Vrindavan, was feeling some difficulty because he wasn't experiencing the ecstasy that he was supposed to be for Uttama Adhikari. And so somehow or other he just decided to experiment and take some LSD. Then he saw Radha and Krishna. So he realized that this was the new revelation for this age, was that it was the chanting Hare Krishna plus LSD would do the job. And so he had these, called it the sacraments, you know, the LSD, and that had been going on for quite some time. So you see in the 82 resolutions, Jayatirtha Maharaj is suspended from his duties as GBC and initiating guru. He had gone to Sridhar Maharaj. Sridhar Maharaj gave him, thought it was horrible how the GBC was treating him, and he was an advanced devotee and everything. But then I guess Sridhar Maharaj learned that he was also taking LSD. And so the Jayatirtha went and had his own particular career. It was very heavy when all this was revealed. He was now going to be stop as a GBC and initiating guru. He had prepared a tape for his disciples in England and America and sent people out fast with the tape to get to everybody to tell them, you know, that not to trust the GBC and to leave ISKCON and come with him. And ISKCON sent people, you know, to try to get to the disciples first, and there was this huge race to get to them first and keep them in ISKCON. Anyway, that was Jayatirtha's history there. So he was removed, and suspended. In the next year of the GBC meetings, he was removed. So we had Jayatirtha definitely go off the deep end, Hamsaduta go off the deep end, and really, I mean, really bad ways too. I mean, Tamal Krishna had gotten himself into trouble, but seemed to have straightened out. So again, the GBC is trying to liberalize their initiations, I mean the making of gurus. In 83, there's some resolutions that, if you know what's happening, they're starting to get worried about Kirtananda. The title Founder Acharya and Founder can be only used in reference to Srila Prabhupada, because Kirtananda was now the Founder Acharya of New Vrindavan. ISKCON sannyasis must carry their tree dandas for a minimum of 10 years, including initiating gurus. It's also about him. That ISKCON is appreciative of the wonderful contribution of HGG Kirtananda Swami Bhaktipad and New Vrindavan have made to the Krishna conscious movement by constructing the Prabhupada Palace. The GBC has heard a personal request by Srila Bhaktipad to allow the present system of dressing Srila Prabhupada in the palace to continue. It was controversial. Prabhupada was sitting in the palace, and he had a royal crown on his head. He had a scarlet cape trimmed in, I hope, fake fur, and a mace in his hand. He was dressed not as a sannyasi, but as a king. The royal Prabhupada, or Prabhupada Rex. And many GBCs were distressed about this, and Kirtananda insisted that it be maintained. It was his, quote-unquote, realization. So they said, the GBC heard the request by Bhaktipad to allow the present system of dressing Prabhupada in the palace to continue. Although the system does not necessarily represent the consensus opinion of the body, out of our respect to Srila Bhaktipada, has decided not to change it. So they just gave in, even though they didn't agree with it. I guess the problems with Hamsaduta came to a head in 83, and finally this resolution happened in 84, although there was an emergency meeting. resolved that Hamsaduta Swami is hereby removed from his membership on the GBC, his position as a BBT trustee, his position as initiating guru. He shall no longer be considered a sannyasi. All ISKCON corporations are hereby advised that Hamsaduta is no longer qualified to serve in any authoritative capacity relative to such corporations. All of Hamsaduta's disciples are directed to accept initiation from another ISKCON recognized guru. That was the resolution in 84. So with all these things happening, and with bad publicity like this, Jayatirtha having formed his own LSD cult and going on, Kirtananda getting what people are thinking is weirder and weirder, it seems like almost there was an idea also that was distressing people, was that was happening is the acharyas who had their zones were for the most part getting more and more suspicious of each other and kind of hostile to each other. It seemed like ISKCON was separating into many different movements. And it also among the acharyas there was this notion, at least among some of them, I don't know about all, but I know among some of them there was this notion that what was going on was a kind of Darwinian struggle, and that out of all this struggle some acharyas, as they said, wouldn't be able to take it and would fall down. When some acharya fell down, you saw what happened. Somebody else got his zone, went in, reinitiated all his men, and it was just like this. I mean, when Jayapataka fell down, somebody came into the Detroit temple. Jayatirtha fell down. Came into the Detroit temple. Bhavananda said, "Your guru is a snake." I talked to somebody there. "Your guru is a snake." And that afternoon, everybody was reinitiated. You know, like that, like en masse. And because that was the from the acharya position, that's how you managed. You managed from that position, and that way you had control of personnel, of money, of machinery, everything from that position. So that naturally everybody had to get reinitiated. So somebody fell down, somebody came in and gobbled up all his territory. So there was a notion that somehow somebody would emerge as the self-effulgent acharya out of this process. And it was said that Kirtananda used to chant a version. You know, there's a American jingle that children chant to teach them how to count backwards. It goes 9 little 8 little 10 little 9 little 8 little Indians, 7 little 6 little 5 little Indians, 4 little 2 little 3 little Indians. 3 little 4 2 little, I can't even do it, 1 little Indian, and then finally 1 little Indian boy, you know. So he was chanting 10 little 9 little 8 little gurus, 7 little 6 little 5 little, 1, you know. That was the story about him. So this is when people are getting pretty disturbed. Meanwhile, the GBC is trying to respond to this a little bit in the 80 in the 80 well, then the next really thing that happens here started, and this is, we'll take a break and then pick up from here on for the last section of this is in September of 1984, there was a North American meeting of the North American Temple Presidents. They were just going to talk about Sankirtan. It was in a little town outside of New York called Tawako, New Jersey, where we have a temple. And they met in Tawako, and they began to talk among themselves that there's something wrong. There's something wrong with the way the guru has been put in ISKCON. What is it? What are we supposed to do? They took a little survey among themselves and found that almost to a man, they had big doubts about the whole system. And this is really the beginning of what became known as the Reform Movement. This time it was the Temple Presidents. Before, it wasn't anybody who was organized or official within ISKCON in a way, but now the Temple Presidents started. And they circulated their concerns. I wasn't at that meeting. One thing is, I wasn't a temple president. What happened to me during this whole period, by the way, is when I had been president of Philadelphia Temple from 71 till 78, when the new regime of gurus came in, I started to work in the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I quit as temple president, but somebody else wanted my temple for their, you know, anyway, there's some politics, but anyway, I gave up the temple, Philadelphia Temple, and I was joined to the BI and the BBT. I finished a doctoral dissertation and began working for the BI. So all this stuff is going on. I'm not really, at this point, very much directly involved in ISKCON management. One thing is, I'm working on a doctoral dissertation, I'm writing BTG articles, so I'm a little insulated from all this stuff. And of course, people will come around, you know, with these papers, that papers, and you hear this story and you hear that story. So that's why I wasn't at this meeting. But people came back to Philadelphia and said, wow, there was this meeting, it was really heavy, we're all fired up, we've got to do something. And so, and they had called for another meeting in October of 1984, a second meeting at Tawako, which was not on the schedule, and I was induced to go to that meeting. At first I said, oh no, I can't, another guru thing, you know, I'm sick of it, I'm tired of it, I don't want to hear about it. But then I went to the meeting, and to me it was like there was Bhakti Shakti's crackling in the air, and there was a whole bunch of devotees who were really concerned about the movement and really wanted to do something. And I found the association quite inspiring. It wasn't in a mood of criticism or denigration or anything like that. And also, for myself, I was in our local acharya was Satchrup Maharaj, and there was not a whole lot going on that, you know, like people found outrageous. I was following the same system as everybody else, but I didn't have any complaints about him. I mean, he's always a gentleman, and you know, never heavied out his godbrothers or any of that kind of stuff. So this leads us to the final installment of this this story. Any questions about anything I've said so far? This quick tour.
I wonder, did you and other senior Prabhupada disciples, especially in North America, were your awareness of these events current, or is this kind of like that you've reconstructed after?
No, I think I knew about most of them when they were happening.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be in L.A., and Jadarani came through the room and handed me her papers. Everybody heard about that big blowout at Vrindavan. Hamsaduta was in the newspapers, and people were really concerned about that. Adrista Dumna called me up and told me about, you know, what they were going through with Tamal Krishna Goswami. You know, so I had friends and connections and everything. So we were all hearing these different things. The Topango Canyon talks were famous. The papers got passed around, the one from the Western Zone, the GBC response. So I think almost all of them we knew about. The only thing that was that came of a year late maybe is the Amogha Leela channeling things. That was kept kind of quiet for a while. And then somebody came around with a whole sheaf of papers. Look at this! This is the truth! You know, here it is! But it's interesting, although nobody, not very many people took him seriously as an authentic channeler of Prabhupada. Nevertheless, the major concern that he raised about the simultaneous Guru Puja was finally responded to by the GBC by having separate Guru Pujas. After that, there was, I guess it was first Prabhupada's Guru Puja in the temple, and then in the temple a Guru Puja of the Acharya, current Guru who happened to be there. But it wasn't simultaneously. It was first one, then the other. So if you're a Prabhupada disciple, presumably you could leave and didn't have to go to it if you didn't want to. And that was that change. So yeah, I think we knew about them. This is a little focused on North America because that's in fact what I know about. Other things may have been happening in other parts of the world. But I think most of the disturbances, you know, Jaya Tirtha, Hamsa Duda, these were all happening in the good old USA. Anything else? Yeah?
Is it kind of difficult to focus in on these faults and mistakes and at the same time keep the perspective of,
well, you know, all throughout this period, you could get up in the morning, you could chant your rounds, you could go to Bhagavatam class, you could follow the principle, and you could become, stay Krishna conscious, and people could become Krishna conscious. I mean, in one level of ISKCON, if you do certain things, you're almost immunized from all these things, unless you happen to find yourself in a really bad position where somebody is personally frying you out. But that happened to a minority of people. Most people could actually go through, there was a book distribution, money was coming in, book distribution was happening.
Running kind of now, like looking back.
I'm not disillusioned. I can see why it happened. I can understand why it happened. I think that I have many godbrothers who are bitter and disillusioned that this happened. But when I look at what Prabhupada did, how short a time he had to do this in, and he did name these people, and he knew very well that people were talking about who was going to be initiating gurus. He knew their faults. But, these were Prabhupada's best men. All of these people worked in a very responsible way for Prabhupada. What Prabhupada really, really appreciated was that somebody would actually take up responsibility and carry through with it. He was very, very grateful to those people, and these people would do it. They had their faults and everything like that, but Prabhupada really appreciated the service. And when people began to become very bitter about these people, at least my godbrothers, all I could think of myself is if these are Prabhupada's best men, then why wasn't I any better? Presumably all of Prabhupada's disciples had an equal chance at his mercy. If these people weren't good enough, then I should have been better. And so I couldn't really blame them. I could only say to myself, I should have been a better disciple. I should have been a better person. And I wasn't. So I had the same chance to become Krishna conscious as anybody else. Why wasn't I more advanced? And so in this way, then what do I do about the problem? The leadership problem. Well, I have to deal with myself. I should, first of all, become more advanced devotee myself. Now I know what to do. Now I can get a handle on the problem. I can, first of all, deal with myself. And how can I, if other people need purifying, how can I help purify other people if I'm not, first of all, becoming pure myself? So that's obviously the starting place. So the question is not to become bitter or disillusioned, but to see what actually went wrong. And then what do I have to do to correct it? And fortunately, there are very direct steps you can take to correct and solve the problem. Because the real problem is one thing only, is an absence of a lack of Krishna consciousness. And I think we know how to remedy that lack if we just take the steps. But I really don't appreciate, at least from the point of view of people who are Prabhupada's disciples, the reason that the problem with ISKCON is that other people aren't Krishna conscious enough. And that, to me, a lot of what this stuff goes on among it, that you know, why weren't you more Krishna conscious? But if you have to say, why am I not more Krishna conscious? So I think that, you know, disillusionment, bitterness, discouragement, it is not allowed. And just to show the fact, I think the person who had the most right to be bitter and discouraged was Srila Prabhupada. He watched Bhakti Siddhanta Institute collapse around him. He was there, he saw what Bhakti Siddhanta did, what his vigor that he preached with, what his hope was, and he watched the whole thing fall apart into a total mess. And Prabhupada kept going. And because he kept going, we're able to have the Hare Krishna movement. Now again, there's something of a mess. I don't think it's as big a mess yet as the Gaudiya Mutt got itself into myself. But anyway, there's another mess, and we have to do the same thing. We have to find out what went wrong. But if you're going to diagnose the disease, you've got to look at the symptoms and then what to do about it. If I'm just going to sit around and complain, where there are thousands of websites where you can do that and rant and rave about how other people aren't Krishna conscious enough. But that's not my intention. So I hope people don't get disillusioned and bitter. And I think that sooner or later you'll heal these things anyway. If we don't do this stuff, I mean, somebody is going to sit down and write a PhD dissertation or something about his gun. All the stuff is really not so hard to dig up. Especially if you go to newspaper clippings and things like that, it looks pretty heavy. Yeah. So anyway, I'm glad you asked that question. I hope you aren't too disturbed by all this. I have to rush through this, and so I have to pile hard on hard. At least when I did this at Radha Desh, everybody had a day between sessions to get used to all this stuff. But all the while, Krishna consciousness actually remained possible, if that's what you wanted. And so we're going to take a little break. Let's take a 15-minute break. We're running over time. Huh? Is that enough time?
Yeah.
And then we can go from 6:30 to 8, running late, and try to talk about the conclusion, at least, of this reform movement and what happened, and then, you know, how to go on. Okay. 15 minutes. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.